Chapter 12. Ron fell asleep quickly. He remembered thinking that he wished that Zoe was there to sleep alongside of him, and then he didn't remember anything at all. From somewhere deep inside of a dream, he felt heat, very hot on his face, on his hair, and it pulled him awake. He lifted his head and stared into a very real wall of fire that was crackling and dancing with devouring merriment. Jumping up quickly, he stared at it. He was transfixed by it. The flames were climbing up the side of his wall. A calm came over him as he pulled himself into his jeans, made sure that his pot tray was tucked away in the drawer under his writing table that doubled as his eating table. Then he opened the door and ran down into the hallway to the fire extinguisher. Turning it upside down, as he knew you were supposed to do, he took hold of the hose and nozzle. When he got back to the apartment, the entire side of his hide-a-bed was engulfed, and he pointed the extinguisher at the conflagration, and then nothing happened. The goddamn thing was empty. He shook it and cursed and dropped it on the floor and ran into the hallway screaming, "Fire!" He screamed as loud as he could scream. It was only then that he realized that he'd been choking. He tried to clear his voice and screamed again, "Fire!" Ron heard doors begin to open and people coming into the hall, and he ran back into his apartment and dragged his Aunt Dottie's chair as far away from the flames as he could. He tried to fill something with water, anything, so he could throw it on the flames that were eating everything around him. He saw the paint on the dresser that he'd had since he was a little boy begin to blister and peel away. His feet were bare now, and the floor seemed very hot. The water that he flung did nothing. It disappeared into the flame and belched out one quick, thick puff of black smoke. He could hear people around him now, and someone said, "Get him out of there!" And another voice said, "Get out into the street!" Ron was dazed, but he kept filling the bowl with water and flinging it at the fire. The lampshade went up in a brightly lit crackle that surrounded it and then seemed to engulf it. And then it wasn't there anymore. Ron was dazed, staggering around what was once his apartment, and then hands were on his shoulders, and he was being moved by large men in hats and rubber coats. They were moving past him, and there was a burst of white powder everywhere in the apartment, and he was being carried out into the hall, down the steps, into the street. He stood there, transfixed at the sight of the truck, and people were coming out of the other buildings. More and more firemen were arriving now, and they ran past him and through the double doors, glass double doors, and up a few steps and down the hall. Ron watched them pass like shadows. No one was talking to him, but people were staring at him. Two firemen wearing heavy gloves and coats carried the smoking remains of his hide-a-bed out the front door and dropped it on the small lawn in front of the building. People gathered around and stared at it. Then he saw the landlady, and she looked scared and even more horrified when she saw Ron. "Are you hurt?" Ron stared back at her. "I don't know what happened. I was sleeping." "I think he's in shock," said the landlady's son. Ron looked over at his couch and wondered if he could sleep on the floor of his apartment for the rest of the night. It seemed like only a few minutes later when the fireman came out and said that people could go back inside now. Maybe it had been longer than a few minutes. Ron started to walk back inside with the rest of the occupants of the large apartment house. Men were milling around in his studio. Ron wondered if they found his pot and whether he was going to be arrested. He walked up to one of the men and said in a voice that was strangely soft and raspy and thick, "Will I be able to sleep here tonight?" The men looked at Ron with disbelieving eyes. Ron looked past them and saw that everything that he owned in his life was covered with white powder. His records, his books, his papers, his furniture, except for Aunt Dottie's chair that he had somehow managed to drag into the bathroom. Had he dragged it in there? Had someone else realized the value of it and dragged it in there for him? Ron looked for someone to thank. His landlady was standing in front of him now. "What did you do to cause this?" she demanded. Ron just repeated, "I was asleep." One of the firemen said, "It wasn't the kid's fault. Look over here." The three of them walked towards what had been his wall, and the man pointed at the black char and the flashpoint spidery web that spread out from the electric socket on his wall. "What did you have plugged in there?" said the landlady. "My radio, I think, and my alarm clock," said Ron. The radio was a melted mass of plastic on the floor. One of the firemen kicked at it. The alarm was nowhere to be found. There were two gaping holes in the wall where someone had taken an axe to it. Ron stared at the slashes and felt wounded. It was the middle of the night in Minneapolis when Robin's phone began to ring. She answered on the third volley with a sleepy hello. "Robin, this is your father." "What's wrong, Daddy?" There was instant concern and anticipation in the timbre of her voice. "Your boyfriend's had a fire." Ron looked over confusedly at Richard, snoring softly next to her in bed. "Who?" "Robin? Ron was burned out of his apartment tonight. You know that he lives on my street now and that he took the apartment just a block from where you used to live on Cherry Street. I think they took him to the hospital." Robin's voice was filled with fear. She said accusingly, "Didn't you do anything to help him?" "I tried to talk to him, Robin. His eyebrows were singed and his face was very red, and I could smell burning hair on him." "Oh, God, Daddy, is he okay?" "I think they took him to the hospital, Robin. He was very dazed. I don't think he was badly burned, but he kept apologizing to everyone in the street and saying that he was sorry for disturbing their night." "Okay, Daddy. Thanks for calling and letting me know. I'll take care of it." "I didn't know whether I should tell you or not. The two of you are hard to figure out with each other. It was good that you called." Robin put down the phone. Her hands were shaking. Lenny looked back out at her from the shadows in the corner, gave her a plaintive meow. She shook her head and picked up the phone again, wondering if she would ever look at the damn cat without thinking of him. She dialed the number from memory. Lorraine answered on the fourth ring, like she was wide awake, even though it was almost 4 a.m. there. "Hello?" "Lorraine, it's Robin." Lorraine felt herself brighten into a nervous laugh. "Ron's not living here anymore, Robin. He hasn't lived here in 2 years. "I know," said Robin, with a patient cool in her voice. "And I know that it's very late, and I'm sorry to call so late, but Ron was burned out of his apartment tonight. I think they took him to the hospital." "Did he call you?" said Lorraine with a touch of amusement in her voice. Then Robin outflanked her, as she was invariably able to do. She never dealt with Lorraine from anything but a position of strength. They were too much alike. "My father lives on the street. He saw Ron and tried to talk with him. Ron didn't know who he was, and he was burned. I can't call his mother, but if you or Warren could help him..." And she didn't say anything. "Do you know which hospital they took him to?" "No, I don't." "I'll see what Warren wants to do." "I'm sure that you will," said Robin. Lorraine walked back through the kitchen and through the middle room that was now equipped with a dining room and chairs and paintings. She went into the bathroom, had a pee, and straightened her hair. Then she knocked on Warren's door. Warren answered with a, "Hang on just a minute." And then he got up and moved to the door. He was wearing a t-shirt and jockeys. Lorraine looked down and then back up at his face. "Robin just called. It seems that Ron had a fire down in Elizabeth and that he was taken to the hospital." "How bad was it?" "She didn't know. Her father is one of Ron's neighbors. He called her. She wants to know if we can do anything to help." "All right. Give me a minute." "Warren, he can't live here. I'll leave if you move him in." "That's not why she called," said Warren. After the doctor looked Ron over and they took his blood pressure and gave him a breathing test and inspected his body for burns, they released him. Ron felt himself moving from somewhere deep inside of him, but all he could see was that wall of flame in front of his eyes and the way the fire danced like something that he was in love with, something that wanted to hurt him. Warren called Elizabeth General and tried to get some information. Yes, there had been a Ron Tuck who had been in a fire. No, they had no information about whether he had been admitted. Yes, he might still be in the emergency room, but he might not be. It was a busy night. Yes, they would see if someone could get a message to him, but they could not promise anything. Moran said, "Tell him that Warren Lashley called and that he's welcome to come here if he needs to." Ron got the message as he was walking out the door of the emergency room. He was wearing a white bracelet with his name printed on it. There was a Band-Aid on his hand from where they had put the heparin lock in and where they had pumped a bag of fluid into him. He got into the first of a line of three cabs in front of the hospital and sent the driver back to Cherry Street. The sun was just coming up when he got out, paid the driver, and looked around for his car. He felt for his keys reassuringly. He thought that he remembered that it was the weekend. He wanted to take a shower. He wanted to change his clothes. But he had no clothes to change into, and he had no place to take the shower. He walked over and stood in front of his building, staring at the reins of his couch, and saw that his rug was in a pile next to it, along with his melted radio. Someone had taken a knife to his couch and exposed the stuffing to the air. He could smell the fire. He could see the fire. He could feel the fire still on him. He walked over to his car and got in, thought about driving to Rahway. He hadn't wanted to go there. The last thing that he wanted was to be broken at Rahway again. It was too early to drive up to his mother's house, and he wasn't ready for her to be angry with him for having had a fire and demanding that he come back there and live. Then a thought hit him. He didn't have his book back. A feeling of panic swept over him. Then the next thought. Why couldn't he go back to his apartment and get the things that he needed? What was going to stop him? He got out of the car and walked through the double doors. The quiet of the building was thick with the smell of something stronger than a burnt dinner. It didn't smell like charred food. It smelled like catastrophe. His door wasn't locked. When Ron pushed it, the door squeaked on its swollen hinges. Ron saw that it was wavy on the inside. Things were strewn everywhere on the floor. In the center of the room where his couch used to be, and there was the smothering white powder on everything. Ron searched until he saw his book bag and smiled for the first time since he didn't know when. It was slid under the coffee table, over by the window, under the fan that had been pushed out of the window and now was lying in the side alley. He picked up the bag and shook it just once, the way he always shook it. He smiled again. He was feeling a little better. He went to his dresser. His mood swung hard in the other direction when he saw it. It was the only dresser that he had ever owned. It was part of the set that was in his room in Newark when he was a small boy and slept on one of the twin beds, his great-grandmother in the other. The beds were long gone, and the chest of drawers was in the garage in Glen Ridge, but he loved this dresser. He found a roll of plastic trash bags under his sink and stuffed handfuls of clothes into them. He went over to his writing desk and held his breath, opened the drawer under the white powdered covered material. It was there. He emptied the tray into the baggie and stuffed it in his pants. And then, without looking back, he walked out, dragging the plastic bag stuffed with smoky clothes in one hand and holding his school bag in the other.